I have a speech to give coming up tomorrow night. And I actually feel bad for everyone else that has to give a speech at this wedding.
Wow, it's that good, huh?
Well, no, I didn't even write the speech yet. I'm going to go off the cuff. But there are 10 speeches at the rehearsal dinner tomorrow. I'm the first one. My goal is to make my speech so good that no one else wants to hear the other 9. So that's what I'm going to kind of do tomorrow night. Or that's what I'm trying to do tomorrow
night. There are 10. I've never been to a rehearsal dinner. 10 speeches given?
A lot of people wanted to talk. I did think that was a big number, if we are unfair. But it's not my wedding, so I'm not going to sit here and bitch and complain. Now, I don't think we were told kind of keep it to like 2 minutes each, you know, per speech. So I don't think it's going to try
fire.
To. Yeah, it's not as if it's going to be I'm speaking for 15 minutes and someone else is speaking for 15 minutes. I would get up and leave at that point or say that I have somewhere to be. But yeah, they put me first, and I thought that was a bad decision, actually. I think that's a little bit of a risky thing. Like, for example, at my sister's wedding, it was me, her maid of honors, my brother-in-law's best man, and then my parents gave a speech, and I was the first one, and I wrote it out. I gave a really good speech. I kind of did like a survival guide for my brother-in-law to survive dealing with my sister, and it was very good. It was funny, and then the best man went right after me. He's like, yeah, they probably shouldn't have put me after some guy that has to speak for a living on the radio. So there's a lot of pressure, I think, on me tomorrow night.
Better deliver some good one-liners. I mean, you know where the bodies are buried. Let's go here. Let's get people
laughing.
Yeah,
but you know what? I think that's always tough with speeches at a wedding because you don't want to make it a roast because it is the happiest night, right, of both their lives or should be. So you want to throw in some one-liners here or there, but I think you got to go more PG-13 than rated R when it comes to the speech. Like, you can't be crushing the bride and groom, even though there is material to crush the bride and groom.
I'm not saying crush, but, you know, there's some good stories that I'm sure people would enjoy. In a lighthearted way.
Have you ever given a speech, by the way, at a wedding or no?
No, sir.
No, never? I'm very surprised by that. Because you've been to quite a few weddings recently. No one wanted to hear Hot Take Hickey give a speech, I guess.
None of my close friends yet have made the plunge, we'll say. A lot of my friends, we're all kind of on the same pace. Slow.
Slow and steady.
Slow and steady. No one's racing to the altar.
You're on the Perry Ellis plan. That's what you're on. or the player at Gonzaga. Why can't I think of his name?
Drew Timmy.
Yeah. You have a lot of success. But it's taken a while there for you. Which, by the way, you know, when we were in Kansas City and we were talking about who would get invited to your wedding here at CBS Sports Radio, Denny, who does a great job making sure that the office stays clean, Denny was listening when we were in Kansas City. Denny comes up to me the other day in the office and he was annoyed at you that you didn't even mention him. He goes, I was sitting there waiting to hear my name. You know, I thought I had good camaraderie with Ryan, and he never mentioned the name of Denny. So I think you have a lot of enemies in that office now.
Denny's got some nerve. You know that? He always gangs up with you against me. And then he expects to get a name recognition shout out and an invitation to the wedding. Come on my side, Denny. So how about this? Back me up here in an argument or two, and maybe I would change my mind.
You know Denny would be great at a wedding, by the way.
You know, he DJs on the side.
I know that. So you could get away. First off, I'm more of a band than a DJ guy at a wedding, but I think you could get away with doing, oh, Denny, I'm going to invite you. Oh, by the way, do you want a DJ? And then you may not even have to pay for a DJ at the wedding.
No, if I'm going to invite Denny, I want him to have some fun. You know, okay. He always talks about partying. He never invites us to party, which is also ironic that he's getting mad at me for not inviting him to this fake wedding that is not happening anytime soon, by the way, for anyone listening out there. And then also on the other side, on the other coin, then goes out and parties, doesn't tell us about it. So I kind of want to see Denny in action here, see what he would be like.
Yeah, but to be fair, if Denny invited you out to go party with him, I think you may big time him. Because let's just be real, there have been times that I've invited you places and you're like, oh, I'm busy. Oh, it's my mother's birthday. Oh, it's Mother's Day. Oh, I got to do this. I got to do that. There are a lot of moments where there's a lot of convenient excuses that I don't know how actual those excuses are because you don't really want to hang out with anyone at the station.
I mean, I would say Mother's Day on Mother's Day is a good excuse as to why I can't hang out, but I digress.
Mother's Day probably wasn't a good point out there. But like when you're just, like I've heard you say it's your mother's birthday like two or three times. Like how many birthdays does your mother have? What, does she celebrate her half birthday too? And like the quarter birthday as well?
Hey, life is short, man. What else are you going to do? You got to celebrate all the time. Any accomplishments, a milestone.
So yesterday, Kyle Brandt comes out with his AFC QB tiers. And we reacted to that. The one big problem that we had was that Trevor Lawrence was so low, and I didn't really get that. I saw you sent me today an email that he came out with his NFC QB tiers, and before I read it, I said, you know what, I'm going to close this email. I want to try to guess. So you tell me, is it seven tiers like yesterday as well?
Seven tiers.
You want to know how bad the NFC is at the quarterback position? When I went through my list, I couldn't even get to seven tiers. I just made it six tiers, and I have all the quarterbacks in there that can't start week one. So how many are in tier one?
One. Just like Mahomes in the AFC, alone in tier one. In the NFC, there's one quarterback in tier one.
Oh, so that's easy. So that's Jalen Hurts.
One for one.
All right, how many in tier two?
Three quarterbacks in tier two.
I think this is easy, too. Kirk Cousins, he's on there, right?
Yes, sir.
Dak Prescott.
Two for two.
Out of sight, out of mind, but did win a Super Bowl. If he's healthy, Matthew Stafford.
3-4-3.
Okay. So how many in tier three?
Three.
So far, by the way, my NFC quarterback tiers, Hurts is one. Then in tier two, I had Stafford, Kirk, and Dak Prescott. So I am in agreement so far with Kyle Brandt. This is a good list so far, but eventually we're going to disagree because I didn't even get to tier seven. I just stopped at tier six. So how many in tier three?
Three quarterbacks in tier three.
Okay, so I had four in tier three. He had three quarterbacks in tier three. Kyler Murray on that list?
He is not in tier three.
Okay, so then it has to be Jared Goff.
Yep.
Geno Smith.
Two for two.
Derek Carr.
Those are the three in okay. Tier number three.
So my tier three, I had Jared Goff, Geno Smith, Derek Carr, and Kyler Murray. Now, I know this past year, Kyler Murray got hurt, and I don't even know when he's going to come back. And maybe you just get to a point where it's just like, okay, it's a wasted season for Kyler Murray. Let's not rush him back. Let's just give him the full year off with how late in the year that he did tear his ACL. But Kyler's got to be in that tier three category because, yes, Jared Goff just had a really good year. Geno Smith just had a really good year. And Derek Carr had a really good year 2 years ago. This past year wasn't a good year. But all those quarterbacks have, like, good potential. And all those quarterbacks have been so up and down. And just off 1 year, I don't think that's right to put Geno in tier three and not Kyler Murray with some of what Kyler has done in this league before. And let's be real, out of those four quarterbacks, the term that you like to use a lot, the highest ceiling out of any of those four quarterbacks is Kyler Murray. I'm not in love with any of those four quarterbacks. I think Jared Goff's a solid quarterback. I think Derek Carr is a solid quarterback. Like anytime he steps right into the top 10, he takes three or four steps out of the top 10. And then for Geno, it's okay, let's see if you could replicate what you did last year. And if there is regression, how big is the regression? And for Kyler, 2 years ago had a really good year, disastrous finish in the postseason. They've not been good down the stretch. But just because he was in a bad situation last year and he has to now be a better leader as well and he's been hurt, I don't think that's right that you put Goff, Geno, and Carr in front of Kyler Murray. I kind of looked at them all on the same playing field where they're a step above the guys that have not been named yet, but they're all pretty much erratic when you look at their careers.
We got for tier four, three quarterbacks in there.
Really?
Three.
Wow. So I only had two in my tier four. So let me see if I could get my two in the tier four first. Justin Fields.
Yes.
Daniel Jones.
Yes.
So those are my two tier four quarterbacks. Oh. Is it Brock Purdy, the third one?
No.
Baker?
No.
Wow.
I'll give you a hint. You just talked a ton about him.
I just talked a ton about him?
Yes.
Oh, Kyler Murray.
Yes.
Duh. I was looking at the bottom because I just assumed that my list was right, and that's why I didn't have Kyler Murray in consideration there for tier four because for me, he's tier three. Okay.
So tier four, Daniel Jones, Justin Fields, Kyler Murray.
Gotcha. Now, how many in Tier 5?
Two.
That has to be Brock Purdy.
Yep.
Baker?
Baker Mayfield.
Okay.
Alone in Tier 5. Tier 6 has three quarterbacks in there.
Now, can I ask you a question about Tier 7?
Sure.
Tier 7 only has one?
Yes.
So he had to have put Bryce Young in Tier 7, I would imagine, just because he hasn't played yet.
Just like he did in the AFC, Tier 7 is all rookie quarterbacks. Same thing here.
So then Tier 6 is Sam Howell,
yep.
Jordan Love,
yep.
and then Desmond Ridder.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Here are my tiers of quarterbacks. Tier 1 was Jalen Hurts in the NFC. Do you think anyone else should be put into that conversation?
No.
Tier 2, I had Stafford, Kirk, and Dak. Do you have any problem with any of those guys in Tier 2?
No, sir.
Tier 3, Goff, Geno, Carr, and Kyler. Are you fine with me putting 4 in Tier 3?
I would have put Kyler in Tier 4. I don't think he's right now Tier 3 material.
Really?
Yes.
But, so yeah, A, because he's hurt, but what else makes you say, outside of the injury, that you have to take Kyler Murray out of the Tier 3?
He hasn't played well in a year and a half. That's, for me, the biggest thing. Not even really the injury. It's the fact that ever since they started 7-0 and you had that game against the Packers on Thursday night when the Packers had no receivers healthy, I believe that was because of COVID, and they still were able to win the game, Kyler Murray's not looked good whatsoever since that. That was a total tail slide. He was hurt and missed a few games because he got hurt in that game.
He was hurt down the stretch, yeah.
Did not look good, was awful in the playoff game, and he came back the following year and kind of picked up where he left off. He's not very good whatsoever before he got hurt. So right now, it's a year and a half of bad football for me. So I put him in Tier 4.
So you think Kyler is more so on the playing field of Daniel Jones and Justin Fields than Goff, Geno, and Derek Carr?
Entering this year, absolutely.
Okay. That's if that's the way that you want to word it, fine. Now, Tier 4, Jones and Fields, and then you had Kyler. I just have Jones and Fields.
You know, outside of Kyler, I think I'm in agreement there. I think Daniel Jones, Justin Fields, absolutely Tier 4 right now.
And here's the thing. I feel like Jones and Fields are both similar, where Fields just hasn't played enough yet, and Jones has more in-game experience. But we both know that those quarterbacks can run. We saw Jones improve as a passer this year. Fields made some big throws as well. And do I think Fields has a higher upside? Yes. And I do think now that the Giants is a little bit more trust in that organization with what they did this past year. But I kind of feel like they are similar quarterbacks where you watch what they did last year and you see signs, and the Giants had more team success, but you want to see if they could really put it together this year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you there. I can't argue that.
And then Tier 5 for me, it was just two quarterbacks. I had Brock Purdy and Baker Mayfield. Like, Baker, I think his past that 1 year in Cleveland does matter. Brock, it was a very small sample size, but I do think they're a step above than my Tier 6, which was Sam Howell, Jordan Love, Desmond Ridder. And then I was debating where to put Bryce Young, because I think Bryce Young's going to be really good, but we haven't seen him play yet. So I'll put Bryce Young, you know, I'll put him more Tier 6 than Tier 5, but it wouldn't shock me after this year if we look at Bryce Young as a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield and Brock Purdy.
The only thing I would say just down the stretch of these final tiers is I just can't sit here and tell you Brock Purdy and Baker Mayfield are in the same tier. Like, if you want to put Brock Purdy in Tier 5 by himself, fine, because he played well in a very small sample size, but that's exactly what it is, an extremely small sample size of 5 starts. So I can't feel like I can't put him higher for the guy like Daniel Jones, who has, you know, had years of success and won a playoff game, and Kyler Murray's at least had years of success as well, where, again, it's been so small with Purdy. Baker, yes, he played well in 2020 with the Browns, absolutely.
He had 1 year.
He's not been very good since then. You know me, I'm a Baker guy, but even though Love, Ridder, and Howell are in Tier 6, at least in Kyle Brandt, how he did it, and all kind of inexperienced, you know, they've played very little, and Baker Mayfield is not exactly a guy who's inexperienced, I think I'd still put him in Tier 6, honestly.
You would put Baker in Tier 6? Really?
I would.
And isn't that funny? Because you were someone last year that said Baker Mayfield, before the season started, is better than Kirk Cousins, and you said Baker Mayfield was going to be a top 5 quarterback in the NFC.
And how did that turn out?
The hickey hacks. Alive and well.
One great Thursday night game against the Raiders. It turned out poorly. So I learned my lesson. There you go. I learned my lesson.
You know what's going to start happening? you're going to have agents that start reaching out to you. Like, if their client is in a QB battle, like, for example, give me Trey Lance. Let's say Brock Purdy isn't ready for week one. Let's just go under that assumption. You're going to have, like, Sam Darnold's agent reach out to you to say, hey, can you go advocate for Trey Lance that he's going to be great just so our guy Sam Darnold can win the job? That's what I think is going to happen. You can make a lot of money that way.
You know what? I was going to say, if I'm getting paid, I can make that an industry for sure.
I think you'd be great at it because I don't think you try to be wrong, but you end up being wrong a lot. Just like the worst take you've ever had yesterday on CBS Sports Radio, where I got a lot of angry DMs. A lot of people are unhappy with you when it comes to the fact that you were criticizing the appearance of Jessica Alba. A lot of people upset. And you know what's bad? You're on this island with Mirage. Like, that's when you know you have a bad take if Mirage is the only one that's coming in to throw a life saver at you, a life vest.
I'm not even saying she's ugly. All I'm saying is just, like, people are fawning over and, like, it's like
she's
drooling.
Gorgeous.
And it's like, go, you know, take Jessica Alba from, like, 2010 right now. That's all.
You're ridiculous. You're absolutely ridiculous. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll talk some NBA postseason with former NBA player Jason Thompson next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
We continue. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio, broadcasting today inside our great affiliate, CBS Sports Radio affiliate, Sports Radio 94 WIP, as I'm here in town for a wedding. And a lot of people today in the city of brotherly love, they're not happy with the Philadelphia 76ers. That series is tied up at one game apiece after they took game one, but then they lost game two. So head out to the guest line right now and welcome in the co-CEO of Hydrate IV Therapy and Wellness. He's a member of the Rider University men's basketball coaching staff. And he, of course, did play in the NBA, and that's Jason Thompson. Jason, appreciate the time. How are you?
What's going on? Appreciate you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. So game one worked oh so well for the Philadelphia 76ers without Joel Embiid. Then Embiid comes back, and the Celtics, they found a way to just destroy the Sixers in game two. The biggest thing that I've seen from the series so far is just James Harden. Like, game one, he was awesome. Game two, he wasn't. And that's a big concern for me because Philadelphia needs him to be that finisher if they're going to want to find a way to beat Boston in this series.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, you have Joel leading the league in scoring, and you had James, you know, leading the league in assists. So, you know, you had that balance for most of the season. And obviously, when the playoffs come, everything kind of just shrinks, and you kind of, you know, get to analyze teams a little bit differently. You know, with the Celtics matchup, it's a little bit tough because of their three-point shooting and things like that. And, you know, I think with Joel and James playing against the Celtics, I think, you know, they haven't had the best record. I think Joel has actually lost to the Celtics, I think, six times in our six straight games. With that being said, like you said, it just opens the floor up. You know, I understand the Warrior, you know, aspect mentality of playing through injury and stuff, you know, in game two and right after winning the MVP, which was well-deserved. But like you said, you know, James wasn't really – you know, that aggressive in game two, you know, and then he has to use that, especially when Joel is out.
Did you think that was the wrong decision to play Embiid in game two? Did you think you already took game one, maybe just rest him for game two and then get him back in Philadelphia for game three, a little bit rested?
Yeah, people were asking me even before the game, I was thinking getting one game, and I just think that, you know, just keep riding it and see how it is, right? Because I think that the Celtics had to make an adjustment. But I think with Joel coming back, they didn't really have to adjust. They went to the same game plan that they did when they played against them, you know, during the season. So, you know, I think, I mean, it's tough to say because, you know, if you're MVP of the league and you say you want to play, I don't know too many coaches that are going to say no or heck no. So, you know, it's a tough situation for sure. But you just want to make sure that he's healthy, and obviously he's definitely playing game three.
Jason Thompson here with us. Last night, Jason Tatum only had 7 points in the game, and the Celtics still had a big beatdown on the Philadelphia 76ers. That's also what's concerning if you're a Sixers fan. Like, Tatum wasn't even great in game two, and they still kicked their ass.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it was just the rhythm of the game. Sometimes it's like that. Times where, you know, your most, you know, crucial players, you know, don't have to do much in those type of things. You know, I think the game was kind of out of reach at a certain point, and then, you know, there was no point for the coach to put him back in the game regardless of his shooting. You know, he didn't really shoot the ball that much, but they're moving the ball around. So, you know, obviously, you know, it's just one game and it doesn't really affect the whole series, but, you know, you got to take advantage, obviously, now, you know, with two games at home and adjust to what the Celtics have to bring.
Hitting up some of these other series, Miami and New York, Jimmy Butler didn't play game two. The Knicks were able to get a win. That series now tied at one game apiece as it moves to South Florida. I know this isn't the prettiest of basketball, Jason, but I love the competitive spirit by both teams with Jalen Brunson and then Jimmy Butler when he's been playing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like the old school, you know, Knicks and Heat from, you know, Alonzo and Patrick Ewing. But I think it's, you know, it's a balance. I think it's going to be a seven-game series, honestly, though. But like you said, I mean, it's just a chess match of, you know, Miami got, like I said before, with the Sixers series, they got their win. You know, even though Jimmy got hurt, you know, they're like, we can you know, be able to rest him and then get him ready. I think they had like, you know, 4 or 5 days off. And things like that. But also the missing piece for the Knicks was Julius Randle because he didn't play game one as well, too. So, you know, there's just a lot of things where if guys play well, guys are on the floor. But, you know, like I said, Miami's still coming in there with a lot of confidence. I mean, I'm thinking they're thinking, you know, the game was still winnable for the Heat even without Jimmy. So, you know, they got to come in there with a lot of confidence with two games going into Miami.
Jason Thompson here with us. You were briefly a part of the Golden State Warriors. All these years later, what do you take away from being a part of that organization briefly?
Well, honestly, I mean, it was crazy. I had went back to I went to the games one and game two in Sacramento, Kings and Warriors. And obviously, you know, I played for the Kings for 7 years and longest tenured in the team's history. So it was definitely a surreal situation being back in that arena and going to a game with two teams I played against. So I say that to say that, you know, you go from one team where at the time wasn't in the playoffs for a long period of time and then going to a championship type culture. You know, you just kind of just wish you were around that environment, you know, from day one or season one, you know, the years that you play. But like you said, you know, they have that formula. And even if they don't maybe have the same type of team that they had last year, they still have a chance and are proving people wrong. You know, you're the champs until you're beaten.
The Kings probably were the best feel-good story in the league since you played there for so many years. To see what Mike Brown did this year, what De'Aaron Fox did in a big spotlight on a big stage, what was it like for you to see that team success?
Yeah, I was happy to see, man. I mean, it's, you know, finally have the right ownership of Vec and then being able to have a great coach in Mike Brown and deservingly so wins Coach of the Year. And I think, you know, that's what happens when stuff at the top is good and smooth, then – you know, I wasn't surprised at all. Then you have a legit superstar in De'Aaron Fox. You bring an all-star in, it's a bonus. And then you got like a guy like Malik, sixth man. And then you got Harrison and a lot of, you know, and like I said, Keegan Murray, you know, rookie and stuff like that. So you got a lot of guys that are great pieces and, you know, sky is the limit for that team.
Jason Thompson here with us. I got to ask you about Draymond Green because I'm all over the place with him. I couldn't stand him when he stomped on Zabonis, and then the other night when he came to the defense of Jordan Poole, I thought that was neat, but then I remembered he punched Jordan Poole in the face before the season started. You were briefly around him. What is Draymond like as a teammate inside that locker room?
Nah, man. I mean, it's Draymond, you know, is a good dude, man. Honest, you know, somebody's got to be the villain at times, and, you know, regardless of certain things you had and resume, I understand that, you know, you're most, you know, hated, but, you know, he thrives off that. You know, he's an energy type guy, and he has the championship pedigree and, you know, uses it to his advantage. So obviously there's, you know, certain things and, you know, the time that, you know, he got suspended against the Cavs that 1 year where they didn't win the championship and stuff. So, I mean, you know, sometimes it's unfortunate, but, you know, without him on that team, you know, they're not a championship caliber team. So you kind of got to just take him and give in different situations, the good and the bad.
You played in the NBA from 2008 to 2016. Dylan Brooks bit off more than he could chew in that series up against the Lakers, and now it seems like he's getting clowned. The team wants nothing to do with him anymore, per the reports. What advice would you give Dylan Brooks?
Man, I mean, you know, this generation is just a little bit different, man. I think that, like, you know, Dylan is you know, no disrespect, but like trying to be that type of like Draymond. But, you know, with Draymond, regardless if their skill sets are not the same, you know, he's been around, you know, championship, you know, caliber and has the rings to prove it. So, you know, to be the villain when, you know, essentially, you know, they haven't, I don't think they've been to the Western Conference Finals and, you know, and all the turmoil and that young but talented team, man, it's just, you kind of just, you know, like I said, sometimes that works out, but you know, when you're going against out of all people, LeBron James, man, I mean, that's probably the best advice you can give is don't poke that type of bear. That bear is a little bit different than a Yogi type bear.
Jason Thompson with us on the Zach Gelb Show. That game one between the Lakers and the Warriors, everyone's talking about the shot at the end of the game by Jordan Poole. Sure, you'd rather have him closer to the 3-point line, but I don't get what else he was supposed to do because the Lakers played good defense on Steph.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, man. We live in a world where with social media and, you know, no one misses anything, right? And everyone's perfect and everyone's supposed to do what everyone thinks they're supposed to do. So regardless of saying that Anthony Davis had 30 and 20 and he was the reason why they were even in that position and, you know, they made a 14 and something run in the fourth quarter. So technically, you know, if the Lakers – stayed home, then there wasn't even that type of shot. But he also had made 6 threes at the time.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he could have moved in and stuff, but, you know, like I said, he took the shot. If he makes it, he's a hero. If he misses it, it's a terrible shot. So.
I know CP3 is hurt, but how much is it the lack of chemistry right now with the Phoenix Suns is why they're down 2-0 to the Nuggets?
Well, it's tough. I mean, I'm not sure about the chemistry because I haven't breaking down the film like that. Obviously, you could tell even just second half of the season, I think that Chris Paul, you know, hasn't been himself. So that could be injury. But, you know, with veteran guys like that, man, they don't try to use excuses because you work so hard in the offseason to be where they are. But like I said, I mean, it's obviously concerning if he's not going to be able to play in game 3-4. I think they said 3-5. But then, like you said, man, you got Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. I feel like you're going to be pretty solid if they're healthy. But I think with the trades and stuff, it's just tough for their bench, you know, with the type of production that they might need. So it might, you know, take those two and then a couple other guys.
Who are you picking right now to win it all? Because I like Denver with the way that Murray has kind of got back and showed you he could be that finisher.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, though, like before even all this second round of playoffs, I was saying either the Celtics or the Suns. But if I was a betting man, I might have to change up and maybe say the Nuggets as well, too. I mean, like I said, man, that's what makes the playoffs so exciting, even though it's probably not exciting for fans that are fans of specific teams because, you know, you never know who's going to be able to win a series, let alone each and every game.
So right now you're the co-CEO of Hydrate IV Therapy and Wellness. Tell me about it.
Yeah, man, it's been great. I've been teamed up, you know, with my – so I'm actually the coach, assistant coach at Rider University, and the head coach's sister has been in the medical field. So, you know, what a better way to kind of get back to the community and stuff and being able to hydrate, you know, athletes and young adults and adults and you know, and, you know, the elderly and the list goes on. So it's from South Jersey where I'm from, you know, about 10, 15 minutes outside Philadelphia. And, you know, we open up this month in May. So I'm really excited and being able to, you know, just start a new business.
Well, good luck. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this.
I appreciate you guys for having me. Thanks.
There you go. Jason Thompson, former NBA player, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Once again, the co-CEO of Hydrate IV Therapy and Wellness, also an assistant coach now on the Rider men's basketball team and played in the NBA with Sacramento and also the Warriors, the Raptors, I think another stop or two as well. We'll take a break here on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, I got to get into something that Lamar Jackson said. And if I'm a Ravens fan, I hear this and I'm concerned. We'll tell you about that on the other side.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio, broadcasting to you today live from Philadelphia. Hickey, I actually had a cheesesteak today. I haven't had a cheesesteak in a while, even though I've been to Philadelphia quite a few times, but just have quickly, like, come down here for games or had to just quickly come down here for a wedding. But today I had a lunch and I had a cheesesteak.
Wow. Okay. Where did we go?
The name of the place, I don't even know where I went, to be honest with you. And that's going to sound very weak. I was meeting up with friends and I just went to go get I just sat down at the restaurant. I don't even remember the name of the place. We just like were walking and then stopped in at a place. And I wasn't even familiar with it. It was when my friends were on their lunch breaks. And I saw there was a cheesesteak on the menu. So I got myself a chicken cheesesteak. So it wasn't like I ended up going to D'Alessandro's or Mama's or John's Roast Pork or Angelo's. I will be making one of those stops today. But when you're in Philadelphia and you sit down and you haven't had a cheesesteak in a while, I just felt compelled to get a cheesesteak. It was a solid cheesesteak. It was like a, let's say like a 6.3 out of 10. Like, it was good. It wasn't great. I've had better. But for some reason, I don't even remember the place. My friend just, we were walking, me and a few friends, and they just said, all right, let's go to this place. They just wanted to find the place that there was no wait for lunch.
All right, not bad. Not a bad way to start the day at all.
No, none whatsoever. And I'll tell you, this is very un-Zach Gelb-like. A chicken cheesesteak was pretty good, if I had to admit. Usually you think, right, Zach Gelb would be getting the meat cheesesteak, but I ended up getting a chicken cheesesteak with provolone cheese and some onions. It was very, very tasty, and it had to be on an Amarosa roll. There was no doubt about it. That tasted just like an Amarosa roll. So very much so did enjoy my cheesesteak. I am concerned, though, and it's not because I had a cheesesteak, and the cheesesteak did not disagree with me, so it's no bathroom problem that I'm going to have to go through. What I'm concerned about is the quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens. And if I'm concerned about the quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens, that's a problem, because this is a guy that I have defended from a lot of unfair criticism for so many years. Like when that dope Bill Polian was saying he needs to change his position, I thought that was a bunch of hogwash. When people are now saying Lamar Jackson can't win a Super Bowl because he's had some shortcomings early on in his career in the playoffs, I think that's ridiculous, because not every quarterback walks into the league and right away is Tom Brady or is Patrick Mahomes. I think people forget sometimes how long it takes for a player to go out and win a Super Bowl. But really, you would think that there is no problem with Lamar Jackson because he got the contract, $52 million a year. What was it, $185 guaranteed? I believe so. Whatever the specifics were. So you should really think there should be nothing critical that I have to say about Lamar Jackson, because I think he was deserving of big-time reset-the-market quarterback dollars. Well, I heard Lamar Jackson's press conference today, Ryan, and there's one thing that really concerns me about what I heard from Lamar Jackson today, and I want you to hear this audio.
I think I told someone, like, man, I want to throw for like 6,000 yards with the weapons we have. Like, you know, and I'm not a individual award type of guy or stat watcher. You know, I just want to do that, you know, because no one ever done it. And I feel like we have the weapons to do it. You know, we got explosive guys.
I know that you hear that and you're like, Zach, what are you freaking out about? The guy said he wants to do something that no quarterback has ever done, which is throw for 6,000 yards in a season. And the quarterback with the most yards in an individual season was Peyton Manning back in 2013 when he had 5,477 yards in that season in Denver, which was actually 2013. So I hear that, Ryan, and what makes me concerned is you look at Lamar Jackson. He's been nowhere close in his career for throwing even to 4,000 yards. Like, the most passing yards that he's had in a season is 3,127. And by nature, because of how much he runs the football, you're not expecting him to even throw for 4,000 yards in a season. So if he's saying he wants to throw for 6,000 yards, first off, that's not realistic. But then by design, he's going to be running the football less. And I know some Ravens fans may be sitting here and saying, oh, that's great if he's running the football less, because that means he's not opening himself for injuries. Lamar Jackson, and a big misnomer about Lamar, even though he's running the ball a lot, we've not seen Lamar take a lot of vicious hits. And what makes Lamar so great, and he's not a bad passer, but he's not a great passer. He's a good passer. He's a solid passer. but it's that threat to be able to run, like, outside of Jalen Hurts, like, no other quarterback can run in the NFL. So if he's saying the goal is 6,000, and I think we could all collectively roll our eyes at the idea that he's going to have 6,000 yards passing, but maybe then, in his mind, it's really like 5,000, because a lot of quarterbacks go get high fours, low fives when it comes to passing the football, and that tells me, Hickey, that he's going to be running the ball less, and in his mind, he wants to throw this year. And I know he's had some improved weapons, like you go draft Zay Flowers, maybe Rashad Bateman could stay healthy. They bring in Odell, but Odell, he's never healthy anymore. Likely's fine. Mark Andrews is one of the better tight ends in the NFL. But when I hear Lamar say he wants to throw for 6,000 yards, I probably shouldn't be concerned about it because it's a goal. But how do you come even remotely close to achieving your goal? That means you're going to be running the football a whole lot less, and that's not the best version of Lamar Jackson. It's the way that he can not only kill you with his arm, but then be pretty much one of one on a football field at that quarterback position with the way that he runs the football.
Right, Lamar's at his best when he is a dual threat and he's running and passing. I'll be honest, I hear that, and I just think it's someone who is caught up in the moment in the sense that he just got paid. You now see all of a sudden the Ravens for the first time are actually putting legitimate resources into the wide receiver room. I don't think the offense, honestly, even with the new offensive coordinator Todd Monken coming in, is going to change that drastically in 2023. I still think the Ravens, and especially John Harbaugh, know what is going to lead to success for the Ravens offense. I don't think they're going to get away from that. And especially, too, if you're the Ravens and your biggest fear now that you paid Lamar's injury, both times Lamar has gotten hurt the last 2 years, it wasn't running the football.
No.
He was in the pocket.
Yep.
He was passing.
So, and that's the misnomer about Lamar.
To, oh, he ran the ball on a designed run, a quarterback sneak, and that we can't do that anymore. He was a pocket passer both times he got hurt, so I don't think that even the injuries are going to scare the Ravens away in the sense that they're going to run him actually less when the games start in September.
And really, I'm sure there's been other times he's taken vicious hits, but and we've talked about this before. The only time like I really recall Lamar taking a vicious hit where you were like, ooh, he's just not going to be able to survive this if he consistently does that, is in the game where he broke the most rushing yards in a single season by a quarterback all those years ago. I forget the opponent, but that's when he took really a vicious pop. I'm sure there's other instances because it's just by nature in the NFL, but with how much he exposes his body, it's not as if he's taking these horrible hits as much as you think he would with how much frequency he does run the football.
Right, which is a reason why that the offense, even with the new OC, I don't think should or will change drastically now that Lamar is paid and now that you know you kind of view him as that prized asset and you want to keep him on the field as long as possible.
Did the Ravens, though, you talked about how they improved their wide receiving room. Did they really improve it by that much? Like, I like Zay Flowers, but I also liked Rashad Bateman coming out of college, and so far we haven't seen much out of Rashad Bateman because he just has not been available. And I was a big fan of him and Tyler Johnson back at Minnesota. Actually, didn't they play a really good game up against Penn State, Hickey, where they beat Penn State?
That they didn't.
Yeah,
they
so, did. So that's when I first like really became aware of Johnson and Bateman, and I really started to like both those wide receivers. And Bateman hasn't really done much in the NFL. Odell, he's not an elite wide receiver anymore, but in NFL circles, people love Odell Beckham because he was once a star. He could still be a good player, but I can't say he's going to be a great player because I just don't know if he's going to be able to be healthy.
I wouldn't say they improved, but they definitely put resources. They definitely tried, at least, for the first time in a long time.
Did they get the right resources? Like, they brought in Nelson Aguilar and Odell Beckham Jr. Do either of those names really excite you? Like, out of the three, I would be most excited about Zay Flowers because we just haven't seen enough of Zay Flowers yet.
I mean, I'm with you. I don't think this wide receiving core, especially OBJ, is now all of a sudden going to be this breakout wide receiver, and the Ravens have their bona fide number one that can match up with Jamar Chase or Stephon Diggs, that's for sure.
How do you think Lamar, by the way, came up with the number 6,000?
In the moment, kind of got carried away and thought, let's just say a number that no one's achieved.
Because it's nowhere even close. It's nowhere even close to Peyton, who did 5,477 yards. Like, it's not even in the ballpark there. that's why it's such an obscure number. Like, Peyton Manning would have had to play, what, two more games maybe to get those other 520 whatever something the math is? So it's kind of bonkers when you look at the number 6,000. Let me ask you this. Will Lamar even break 4,000 passing yards this year? Because I would probably say no. Like, you look at Lamar, the most was that 3,100-something yards in a season, and he's still going to run the ball, but I just wonder, and here's the point that I'm making. I'm wondering how much is the number 6,000 going to be him saying, guys, I want to knock that perception that I'm just a running quarterback, and now I got my deal. We're going to do it my way. I want to throw. It's just something I wonder. I'm sure there'll be a balance. If he gets the 4,000, though, he should be celebrating that, because I don't even think that will happen.